Hi, this is Robert O'Reilly. My name is Gowron. Honor to you and your house. You're listening to Trek FM.
Theo Greyhawk.
Welcome to another episode of Earl Grey. I'm your host, Amy Nelson, and joined with me today are Richard and Lee. Richard, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. Happy Easter over there, Amy.
Well, it is. We are recording on Easter. This will drop a few days later, but happy Easter, everyone. And Lee, how are you over there?
Well, you could say I have also returned. Yes, it's in the Easter tradition. Yeah, I was obviously off last week. The recording day switched, so sadly I had to sleep while you guys recorded. So I'm back, and then I'm away next weekend off on a exotic trip up the coast. So yes, I'm back, and then I'm going to go back north, I suppose.
Yes, Lee is the one who has a life out of all of us. So, well, we are excited. We are going to talk about our unsung episode, season 3. Now, we are doing this to commemorate Next Generation's 30th anniversary this year. And so we are going through each of the seasons and picking episodes that don't get a lot of love and that we feel you might consider to rewatch with a new light and new perspective. So we have come up with each of us a list of 3 episodes, which has been very difficult to choose from. I mean, season 1 and season 2 was difficult, but even more so, I feel, for this season. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, you've sent us our homework. We're not allowed to pick certain episodes, which always makes it all the more harder. So yeah, we've certainly had to think deep and hard about those unsung episodes when the season is so full of amazing big episodes. Yesterday's Enterprise, Best of Both Worlds, it really kind of, you know, made The Next Generation the show that kind of everyone started to fall in love with at that part. So yeah, I've certainly had to think, sat on the toilet, just going through the list of season 3 episodes, kind of scrolling them off, which ones are the most important. And I think I'm happy with my list.
Oh, good. Yeah, so we are not choosing Who Watches the Watchers. We're not choosing Yesterday's Enterprise, and we're not choosing Best of Both Worlds. I think everyone can agree that those are fan favorites. So Richard, how was it for you choosing your 3 episodes?
Well, you know, my favorite episode in the whole entire world is on this one. So, of course, I got to choose that one. But yeah, it was very difficult. There are some really good episodes that I really like a lot. And I'm sure a lot of people like them as well. And I would hope, I hope so. But yeah, it definitely was hard. I wasn't sitting on the pot, but I was definitely going through the list in bed last night. So. Yeah.
Yeah. So when I was thinking, I was like, okay, so which ones do fans not like? And I, of course, do like. So that's sort of the twist that I went with. So let's get right to it. Lee, give us an episode and your thoughts on it.
Yeah, I've gone for, I suppose, an episode some people think is absolutely atrocious. It's Captain's Holiday, which I'm a big fan of. I think it's important for a couple different reasons. I always try and pick something like a little obtuse about an episode or something a little different that's maybe been overlooked. And I think back to our Nemesis chat where we talked about like movie Picard is nothing like TV Picard. Well, he's a bit like Picard in Captain's Holiday. And I think it was Ira Stephen Bear, Patrick Stewart went up to and he went, I just want Captain Picard to shoot a gun and get laid. I think he must have probably been watching James Bond or something the night before. So Captain's Holiday was going to be a bit of a kind of run-of-the-mill episode. And then it's now we've got this captain where he's a bit of a swashbuckler. You know, he's getting in there with the ladies. He's firing some guns. He's kind of an archaeologist. He's channeling his own Indiana Jones, a little bit of James Bond. And I think it's an interesting episode, the first trip to Risa as well, which always seems to kind of get associated with some pretty poor episodes. So this, I think this is probably the best Risa episode. And yeah, I think it's a good precursor to the action Picard we're going to get in like 5 years' time in some of the Star Trek movies. And I think it's an interesting step in seeing our kind of peaceful Shakespeare quoting captain become a bit more kind of a bit more worldly in a way.
Yeah, I love the introduction of Voss. She makes the show. She's excellent. She just mixes so well with Picard. It's really fun to see. And of course, all the teasing for the Horgon, and he just wants to read his book. That was perfect setup by Riker.
Yeah, exactly. That's typical Riker as well, you could say.
Yeah. Richard, what did you think of Captain's Holiday?
I love Captain's Holiday. I wanted to choose that one, but I figured one of you two would have done that. But yeah, it's definitely one of those, definitely a fun episode. It was a lot of fun. I absolutely love that episode. Yeah.
Yeah. Excellent. All right, Richard, give us one from your list.
All right. So besides Tin Man, we're not going to discuss that one.
Well, we already did.
You can find us drone on endlessly about Tin Man on a previous episode. So yeah, check it out.
Yeah, you're going to have to find it somewhere.
You can put like an extended edition of this out where it's kind of like the Lord of the Rings. Just like insert a previous podcast episode into this. Like, I'm going to talk about Tin Man. Insert extended cut shot here. Cut to like 50 minutes later. So, Amy, what's your first choice?
Nice. I actually chose as my first one as the Ensigns of Command. One of my favorite episodes. I mean, granted, it's a Data story. I'm not entirely too fond of Data stories all the time, but this one is by far one of my favorite ones. And it's mostly because, you know, it's basically like first contact, but not, you know, they're relocating another planet. They're relocating the entire colony to another planet. And it's just, it's, I guess if you're lost and you've been forgotten for a long time that your civilization is, or not civilization, your colony, you know, you've built so much on this colony and you don't want to leave. And yet, you know, they don't understand the magnitude of their problem. And I love that how Data actually explains, you know, this is what could happen. And you really want to go up against them sort of thing. So it's like, yeah, it's one of those good episodes that I like about, you know, it's obviously, I guess kind of Prime Directive, but not really, but yeah.
Yeah, this is the one with the Shellyak, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, so whenever I think of that episode, I'm always, the Shellyak is what comes to mind, and this is where Picard is at his best, being the diplomat, being the one that goes to the rules and regulations to talk his way out of it and comes up with this brilliant idea of, well, we need a mediator, and this mediator happens to be, you know, in hibernation and can't get here. And so that's the way you want to play. We're going to play by the rules, and this is the rule that we want. And so it's just perfect. I love the outcome of that. Just, it really highlights Picard's strength in diplomacy.
I always think of it for Picard acknowledging that dust exists on a starship, that when he goes over to the plaque and he just gives it a wee little check to see if there's any dust. So yeah, that even in all these centuries from now, there's still going to be the problem of dust to be dealt with in space.
Housekeeping.
Hey, don't give the idea that we're on a starship, a hotel starship here.
Yes, Hilton and the Stars. That's for Zach and Ken.
What about you, Amy? What's your first pick?
Okay, so one that I know a lot of people generally don't like, and I know that the writers themselves didn't really care for it, but I love it. It's The High Ground, and this is otherwise known as the terrorism episode. And so they're in Beverly gets taken by one of the terrorists, Finn, and they have to resolve the situation. And so what? Why do I like this? First of all, I really like his drawing of Beverly Crusher, and that just really sticks in my memory. I mean, the drawing, the chalk drawing that he does of her, and, you know, you can see that he has a heart. And so we get this play on, well, ooh, the bad terrorists, and that usually society has. But well, it's flipped, and we get to see his side of the story. And there are a lot of fabulous, fabulous quotes with Finn and Crusher and Picard and Data, where they're talking about terrorism. And is it effective? Is it worth doing? I mean, war is a battle, and you're going to have loss on all sides. And so I like to see that the flip side of it, you know, with Finn and his purpose.
Do you think that this was one of those scripts that they were testing out for, like, Deep Space Nine, for, like, the Maquis and everything?
I think it's probably a bit too early at that stage. Like, yeah, the Maquis really didn't come around till kind of about, you know, 4 more years, really, in Star Trek. And I think it was more of a sign of the maybe straying away from the Star Trek vision just a little bit, with Gene Roddenberry's ill health really at the time, and kind of this new blood of writer coming in, you know, the Michael Pillars, the Brandon Bragas, etc., being able to kind of make the show just a little bit darker. And I think it's a precursor to what these writers could do on Deep Space Nine, I think.
Yeah, it does definitely get that darker twist, and yeah.
I mean, because like, it was 1990, and really terrorism didn't really hit its stride until what? I think it was like probably late, 2 or 3 more years later. But like, yeah, I'm this was actually my second pick. Oh. So thanks, Amy.
Oh, yay. But, well, they did have mention of the Ireland.
Yes. Well, yes. Yeah. This is where I'm going to come in. So
thank you.
I'm not going to change. I know when we have a clash, we go to an honorable mention, but I'm going to stick my fork in this. This is my second choice, and I'm going to stick with it because it kind of ties into that this episode in the UK was banned in Ireland, and it was censored here in the UK.
Yes.
And the reason for that was that they talked about a United Ireland, you know, kind of during the 90s, you really are at the tail end of the IRA, the troubles were kind of essentially over really at that point, and it was all about the kind of the peacekeeping process, and the idea of a United Ireland was a very, very controversial remark. So it wasn't shown in Ireland. When it was shown on the BBC, that remark was not there, and it took until 2006, so about 11 years ago, was the first time you could watch this episode unedited in the UK. And that's kind of mind-blowing. You think of all the things in Star Trek history, all these different pieces, and this was the thing that kind of went through the censor. I mean, it was released on video without any issues, but it was, you couldn't watch this episode. So someday, someone that was just sitting watching it on their TV box in 2006 went, wait, I don't remember that line. So yeah, I mean, with the way things are going in the UK just now, there is a bit more talk of potentially United Ireland as a consequence of Brexit and borders and such like. So it is potential that by 2024 there might be a United Ireland. So Star Trek, you know, could be potentially close to on the ball for that one. So maybe Michael Pillars put a few, rest in peace. Perhaps he put a few quid on that kind of coming true. So pretty interesting, really. So yeah, like I know we've both got it as our choice there, but I'm gonna stick with it. I think for that different reason, it's a historical one for censorship and Star Trek.
Yeah, I was gonna mention that as well, but you did a fabulous job, and it reminds me on Standard Orbit, Ken and Zach did an episode of episodes that were banned in the UK. Mm-hmm. So this as one more to the list. So yeah, and I like also that it's a Crusher heavy episode because we don't get to see too much of her as well. Richard, why did you have this as your number two?
I liked it mainly because it was, yes, like you were saying, it's a Crusher episode. We don't see very many of them. It's by far one of the better ones, or at least I thought so. I didn't think it was terribly written. I mean, I know I've heard the criticism of it and the reception of the actual episode. Those who actually could watch it. I mean, I thought it was actually pretty good. I mean, I actually forgot about it because when we were going through these, when I went through the synopsis on some of these episodes, like, oh my gosh, I haven't seen this one in years. And I could see early 1990s. Okay, let's just say the whole NRA or NRA's is it NRA? No, that's
the NRA, right? Is a. To be fair, both the IRA and the NRA are fans of guns.
It's true. They are.
I can't believe I said NRA.
They've got the same issues. No,
the NRA hasn't gone to civil war yet.
Yeah. Yet being the key word.
Yeah, exactly.
IRA.
Is it a IRA? That's what I meant to say. I lost my track of thought on that one. I can't believe
well,
I said
NRA. Well, let me put in a quote here that I really liked. Finn was talking with Crusher and says, "I'm willing to die for my freedom. And in the finest tradition of your own great civilization, I'm willing to kill for it too." I like that, you know, here's this guy on this strange planet, different worlds, yet knowing about our civilization. I found that funny. But, I mean, he makes a good point that it's like we, within our own history, you know, have experienced this. And he's like, this is a war for independence. And I'm no better or different than your own George Washington. And Crusher says, Washington was a military general, not a terrorist. The difference between generals and terrorists is only the difference between winners and losers. If you win, you're called a general.
One man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. I always think of things like Living Daylights, the Timothy Dalton James Bond movie, and I think was it Rambo 3 or something like that, where they're working together with what was essentially Al-Qaeda. And I think it's the end of Rambo. It's like much love to our brother. There are Mujahideen brothers in the Middle East. And it just goes to show how quickly these things can swing, really. You know, people who are considered allies can become, you know, trouble. People that are trouble can become part of the peacekeeping process. You know, you only have to think of Martin McGuinness, you know, an IRA leader who recently died this year. And, you know, people from all around the world, former presidents, prime ministers, all came together for his funeral, which is hard to think from what was essentially a terrorist only a few decades ago. So, yeah, these things can really spin on a dime. History can judge who is a terrorist and who is a freedom fighter a bit more liberal in a bit more of a liberal way these days.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. Well, what I was going to say, because...
Okay.
You know, I could see I could see that this episode it's just a good thing that this episode aired in 1990, because if this was done like any later than that, like 01 or even past that, I don't think this episode would have been at all. I mean, it would have been far more hated than any other episode, I guarantee it. Because, I mean, it's sort of like, I don't want to say, I guess it's romanticizing the terrorist side of, I mean, especially with what the United States went through. It's sort of like putting like a personality to terrorism. And I don't know, I personally don't like that. Well, but like, it's the other side. And like you said, you know, it's a perfect quote that whoever wins the war basically, you know, gets to tell their side of the story. Yeah. Exactly.
History is written by the victors, as Gavron said. But I think I'm going to disagree with your point there, Richard, because I think of Deep Space Nine in particular, where this episode kind of, it dips its toes into terrorism and Trek. And then Deep Space Nine, for example, just goes all in. You know, our second in command is a former terrorist / freedom fighter, depending on who you ask. And that they never hide from that. And there's so many episodes about dealing with the, you know, that aspect of the terrorists that become political leaders, the terrorists or freedom fighters that can't go on and live in peace in our time in a way. And Deep Space Nine is considered this amazing, incredible show and ahead of its time for its view on terrorism. And very bold for its time, and it's very much respected for that. So I don't know. I don't think it would be perhaps hated. I think it could be viewed much like Deep Space Nine and considered good TV.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Because I mean, I like the Maquis story arc, but like, yeah. That's a whole other yeah. can.
Yeah, I think there's an episode in itself, yeah. You know, there terrorism you and TNG. Yeah, we'll yeah. touch on that, I'm sure, at some point.
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome. Okay, well, we all approve of The High Ground. So listeners, let us know what you think of that. All right, so we are on to our second round. Lee, give us another one.
I'm going to have to say my second round choice was obviously Higher Ground there. I know we're meant to pick that's a right. thing. Yeah, so yeah.
Do you have, okay, all righty, Richard, then that's your second, all right.
Yeah, so I was going to say, we might just go to you.
All right, woohoo! Well, my second pick then is Allegiance. And this is the one where Picard is abducted into this laboratory and experiments, but we still have this fake Picard, this doppelganger of Picard, still on the ship. And so I really like this. First, why I like this is because it shows Picard's leadership, and the aliens are trying to, you know, manipulate different scenarios and try and, you know, control their food and obviously their surroundings. And so we see Picard just do what he does best. And we know why he's captain is because he is the one taking control and doing good with the other species and understanding all of their context of their culture. And so I chose it for that because I like seeing his leadership style in that. But we get our fake Picard, and he's singing in 10 Forward. He's inviting Beverly to his cabin and dancing with her and the kiss. And you're like, oh, it's so wonderful. And so, yeah, I like Allegiance. What do you think?
Ales for everyone. Yeah, it's a cracking episode. Yeah, I think it's a somewhat... I don't think of much of a memorable episode, but I just always remember the ales and the shanties for everyone. Yeah, I am sure. Actually, I think he seems more like a British captain than a French captain doing that. That's for sure.
Yeah. Richard, did you like Allegiance?
I did. It wasn't put on my list, but or at least it didn't rank high enough to be on my list. But yeah, I liked this episode. It was a really good episode.
So just to note that Picard, well, his fake Picard, drops in when they're playing poker. And this only happens twice, with the other time being All Good Things. So we get to see that. I like that. And I like seeing Picard because his brain is working nonstop and he's trying to figure out, you know, this whodunit. Where am I? What's going on? Why does this feel like, you know, I'm in this rat race and in this lab? And finally figures out that it's Cadet Harrow, and then he refuses to cooperate any further. And then I just think it's fun. It's sort of a whodunit, and we get to see Picard like in Captain's Holiday. Well, even though it's a fake Picard, but you know, he's blending in and being this other mildly different captain. And I think it works well. So I chose Allegiance for my second pick. All right. So we are on to our third round picks. Lee?
Yeah, I've gone with an episode that I think I love and is potentially, could be argued, maybe one of the best TNG episodes. Sarek. I think it's a fantastically written episode. And the reason I've picked it is not just because it is a brilliantly written, powerful episode, but really the kind of... if anyone kind of has listened to and watched some of the behind the scenes stuff, Sarek is an episode where it was a fighting battle that like the team Ira was really keen to, like, they wanted to mention Spock. Like, just to mention Spock. I mean, it's got Sarek, it's got Spock's dad in it. And, like, Rick Berman's like, no, we can't, you know, really link it with the original series. It's got to stand on its own. And really, up until that point, any crossover was the Naked Now, which, for better or worse, is an interesting choice. And then we see Admiral McCoy passing the baton in a way. And they fought and they fought and they fought to get Spock mentioned in this episode. And I think the scene and potentially Patrick Stewart's finest moment is Picard, when he's channeling all the suppressed Vulcan emotions, rage, feelings, frustrations, and when he calls out Spock's name. It's just an incredible moment, and how hard they had to fight just to get that one word in there, and it really packs a punch. So I think for, you know, you think of shows these days, especially franchises, where they just love crossing over here, there, and everywhere, and plugs, and we'll see more of that in Star Trek in the future, but this one is quite groundbreaking, and it's only a word, and they had to fight so hard for that, and it's such change days. So yeah, for that reason alone, that's why I'm picking Sarek.
I love this episode a lot. Anytime we deal with a crossover for especially TOS, I love this. I love that. It's such a great episode. It really is. Yeah.
Yeah, the drama and the emotion of it all, you know, because you're supposed to be suppressing the emotions and then bringing in the ailment, the sickness that he has, and to deal with this one last mission that Sarek has. And it's all so good. And you get so much of the Vulcan culture and Sarek's wife. Oh, dear, I forget her name. Anyway, she's fabulous, and it is. It's a fabulous, excellent episode. Very good. Excellent. All right, Richard, give us one from your list.
So I wouldn't doubt if there are bets going out right now. So, but I'm not gonna say Tin Man, but I'm gonna go with Sins of the Father.
Okay. Oh.
Love. I love this episode so much because I love Commander Kern. Kern is just one of those guys. I mean, he's hard on everyone except for Worf. And it's like, you want to talk about getting under someone's skin. He's like, of course, the guy who expects the most work in the whole entire ship is the one who gets treated nicely. And it's just, I mean, because like, oh, crap. What was that other one with Riker?
Where Riker goes on, it's yes. The exchange.
Yeah, I can't remember the episode name. Anyway, yeah. So, you know, I'm just going to look it up.
So this was on my honorable mention, and I really like this. We learn, yeah, Worf has a brother, Kern, and we go for the first time, the homeworld, Kronos.
Kronos.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I like this because, and I was thinking that you would put this on your list, Richard, because we really see Worf sacrifice. And, you know, it just begs the question, what would you do to save your country, your culture? Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I just figured, yep, Richard is going to put this on his list. And I agree, it's a fabulous episode. And I love, it seems that finally this, well, for me, that this Klingon and the Worf story is finally something that's not episodic TV. And we mm-hmm. know TNG is so much, you know, just an episode here and there. But this arc that we get introduced with Worf's story is amazing. And it just continues throughout all the seasons. So that's why I chose it.
Yeah, it's on my honorable mentions list, just solely based on it kicks off Ronald D. Moore's association with being that Klingon guy on Star Trek. And Sins of Father, that'll follow on into oh, what's the episode? Reunion, and then Redemption, Redemption 2, and Beyond, mm-hmm. and Alexander, and, you know, everything between. I think it's just a hell of a run that they go on from here, and, you know, picking up from Emissary as well. Yeah, I love this episode, yeah.
Yeah, and in the episode is called A Matter of Honor. And
Yeah,
I just had to look at that up real quickly. But there was a post on the Babel Conference, and I don't know if you guys saw it or not, but someone was, I guess, talking about how Klingons were overused in TNG. And it, from based from what I saw, it was mostly to do with politics. And that's what I love about the Klingons, especially in TNG, because it just... You find out so much more about a species or country or whatever you want to call it,
based on their
politics. I mean, you see how they act, see what kind of troubles are going on in the country or kingdom, whatever. In this case, empire. And that's what that's ultimately what I love about the Klingons is that they're. The politics are, it's all about honor. It's all about pride and everything. And of course, you know, I'm sure if Worf would have known about the Empire going to Civil War, he probably would have plunged it right there. And that would have been one heck of a story. But like, yeah, it's the start of one of my favorite story arcs, which is predominantly the Klingons, especially in Deep Space Nine. That's also what I love about Deep Space Nine is the Klingon story arc.
I saw that on the Babel Conference too, and was really surprised. So sorry, listeners, for those that don't enjoy the Klingon.
There was a lot
episodes.
Of people that actually did like the Klingons specifically for the politics, which I thought was surprising to me, because I actually figured a lot of people would actually hate it for the politics, but I love it so.
Based on the politics of the UK and America at the moment, let's tread away from saying that our politics can define a nation. I'm feeling a bit nervous here. No, I really like the Klingon politics as well. I find it incredibly fascinating. A lot of the credit goes to Michael Dorn and Robert O'Reilly, J.G. Hertzler, and Ronald D. Moore for a lot of their contributions. Like, if there was like a Klingon version of like MSNBC or CNN, I'd be watching that stuff like all the time. Like, I can just imagine watching it going like, I wonder who the Klingon Anderson Cooper is, where it goes, now we're cutting to the Klingon High Council, and like there's the Klingon version of Sean Spicer, and you know, I would pay good money to see that as like a spin-off series, you know.
Sign me up. That is awesome.
I hear right. Well, I suppose, you know, the Romulans, you know, kind of influenced the kind of Klingon elections, and, you know, I suppose that's kind of uncanny, you know. But I wonder what the Klingon version of Fox News would be like. That would be kind of like, that would be like the warrior tribes, most definitely, and stuff like that. So, yeah, count me in. I love
Gladiator TV or something like that.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, and this episode did win an Emmy Award for Best Art Direction for the design of the Klingon Great Hall, so that's noteworthy as well. All right. Okay, so for my... Is it to me?
Yeah, final, I guess, yeah.
Do we not have two more? Is it not? Do we not have five picks?
Oh, well, we'll do three and two honorable mentions.
Oh, yeah, yes. Oh, right. Yeah. Oh, I'm actually golden, and I do have two honorable mentions. Then I overpicked.
Okay, so now I have to decide. There's too many. Okay, I'm going to go with the survivors.
I'm a survivor.
So this is the one where Deanna has an earworm bad, right? The music is playing in her head and the planet completely destroyed except for a lovely square green patch of grass with a house on it. And here we learn that Kevin and Rashawn Uxbridge, I love that name, they're an elderly married couple. Excuse me, an elderly married couple, and they're content to stay on their planet. And they, so we get to why I chose this. This is the first time that Troi wears her turquoise dress, which I will be cosplaying in August. As a side note, I went and had my dress measurements and sent them to my friend's daughter, who's going to be making me the dress. She's so excited. She's got a pattern and everything. So I'm very excited. So But that's a side note. But what I like about this episode is that we're introduced to Kevin. And really, he has this remarkable power, only compared to Q. Who's greater, Kevin or Q?
Based on having watched Home Alone, I would say Kevin is a much more ingenious person than Q. Oh, sorry, wrong franchise. Carry on.
Richard, who do you think's more powerful? Who's greater?
Oh, man.
I mean, he destroys an entire race, civilization, 50 million.
You know, I'm surprised he didn't destroy the Q continuum, too. You know what I mean? Like, how far does his power go?
Yeah, it was said with just a thought, this Husnock race, 50 billion. I mean, it brings up so many questions, like who's greater, Q or Kevin? Because that's pretty amazing power.
I think he had a bad case of the Mondays, probably one day, just like he came back from his Easter weekend, no more chocolate left. And he was like, God, I just hate this planet. It was all dead and I didn't have to go to work. Oh, this isn't good.
Well, at least, at least Q can reverse what he's done. I don't know. I mean, I guess we really don't see the extent of his power. I guess, you know what? Actually, he probably can't reverse what he's done, because once he creates a thought, that's it. And then he doesn't revert it back to where it's supposed to go. So I would assume
Those were like taken out, that those are, you know, experiments, that they're not like him shooting the Enterprise to go see the Borg. I mean, he didn't undo that, you know, because that's like in the timeline. But like Tapestry, to me, that's like pulled out of time. And it's this little experiment with Picard, or when they're taken Cupid, you know, that's obviously them being pulled out for this Robin Hood adventure, you know. So I always thought of Q being like pulling him out of the timeline for this little experiment. But, you know, with Q, throwing the Enterprise to the Delta Quadrant to meet the Borg for the first time. I mean, that's pretty powerful.
Are you saying like Q is more merciful? Like instead of the guy that's in Survivor or Survivors?
Well, I think Kevin was just so torn up from losing his wife, you know, that he overreacted, sadly to say. So maybe Q has more control. Mm. I don't know.
Hmm. Maybe he's the primitive, or not Q, but Q is the more evolved one. And the survivor is the primitive one. I don't know.
Yeah. And I think this episode deserves special praise. And it was nearly on my honorable mention for one and only reason. The line, good tea, nice house.
Yes, classic. I have that.
Good tea, nice house.
Nice house. Yes, Worf's wonderful one-liners. I was, researching this, and the actor who plays Kevin, John Anderson, had recently lost his own wife, and he says that this episode was the most difficult in his acting career to play this, and I thought that was special. So, yeah, I chose the survivors for my third. So, Lee, give us an honorable mention.
My honorable mention goes to The Price, our first little trip to the Delta Quadrant. And kind of, I think by this point with the Ferengi in season three, with Menage a Troy. Sorry, something's on my mind there on Easter Sunday that was ever so wrong. Between Menage a Troy and The Price, I think we're starting to nail kind of the Ferengi's vibe here. That in season one and two, we're playing with them being a bit sinister and a bit of a bad villain. And now they're kind of getting at their best when they're a bit of comic relief, a bit of fun, when their stupidity kind of just pushing forward the story in a more amusing sense, and then kind of like pushing them as a threat. So that was good, and to see our first glimpse of the Delta Quadrant was a treat as well. So that was a big first at the time, you know. We'd only seen really the Alpha and Beta Quadrant, so even though it was only for a few minutes, we start to see the bigger universe at play.
Wait, I'm confused. Was this story about Ferengi, or is this the episode we lost Lee on?
Yes, yeah. Lockley.
Yes. This was the episode where they're selling the wormhole, and as we heard on one of our previous episodes, where they should have got the Stargate SG-1 team to help out, and then the Ferengi end up bidding on it.
I actually like this episode, and I love it that they tied it into Voyager. It's such a great. Obviously, I don't know if it was intentional or not. Well, eventually, they would have to address it. But I absolutely love this episode mainly because you see it on Voyager, or at least you see what happens to them in Voyager. So, yeah.
Yes. All right, Richard, give us one of your honorable mentions.
Honorable mentions. I really didn't. Well, you know what? Screw it. I'll just do it. So I chose Who Watches the Watchers. Is that one of the ones that we were banned?
You can't choose that one.
Are you kidding
me?
Sorry. Ah, damn it.
Nice try.
Is it because it reminds you of your favorite Star Trek movie, Insurrection?
Actually, it's because of the tapestry that's on Picard's back. That's actually the only, that's one of them. Whenever I look for in his quarters or in his ready room, I always look for that in any episode or every episode after, obviously, Who Watches the Watchers. So
yeah, it's not a Nemesis. I know that much.
It's not?
No, that's the only time it doesn't pop up, as far as I'm aware.
Huh. Oh, well. All right. Well, screw it. We'll just go with Tin Man. We gotta have
Richard's
got
a Richard.
So, forward listeners, if you were interested, that's Earl Grey 163.
And that is one of the best episodes ever because it's my Star Trek experience.
It is.
But it's a great episode. It really is. I mean, it's a very playful, well, not really playful. It's it's a really good episode. It's by far what started my fandom. So here we go. So if you want to start your fandom on Tin Man, go for it.
There you go. All right. Well, since of the Father was one of my honorable mentions, I only have one left to pick, and that is The Hunted. And this is the one where the Enterprise D is reviewing this planet's application to the Federation membership. And we have this escaped prisoner, and he's amazing. He knows how to escape. And so seeing the Enterprise just trying to catch him is so much fun, and get to see all of his strategies. And however, though, we do see that this is that he's a representation of this, what the government has done to its war veterans and putting them in this. Oh, but it's a nice place. You know, even if you make things nice, it's still prison if you can't leave. So I chose The Hunted.
Yeah, the super soldier serum.
I know. I'm like, don't create anything you can't handle, you know? And we see that a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I actually like this episode as well. This is actually my second honorable. So, it definitely hits home more because, I mean, we do see veterans coming back and, you know, they're changed from there. I mean, obviously, they're not the same person like they come back before the war, and they've changed quite a bit. And, especially when the war is over. I mean, what else are you supposed to do? I mean, if that's your identity and that's all you are, then what are you supposed to do? Mm-hmm. You know, and it's just crazy on how society in general treats them as well. I'm no super soldier special forces or anything like that. Close, but no. it's just crazy on this story on how they're treated. Yeah.
Yeah, this episode, we have Iron Stephen Bear did a rewrite, and it was his first day as staff writer. So shout out to him, because we all love him. And James Cromwell, what more do we need to say? Love him.
Ram, you. Oh, wrong TV.
That'll do, pick. No, wrong franchise again. What's with me today?
There's four
movies.
So
Lee, did you like The Hunted?
Yeah, I can barely remember a thing about it. I do remember enjoying it, but it's an episode in all the 176 odd episodes of TNG that sort of falls through the cracks, as it were. So maybe I'll need to check it out.
Yeah, maybe you should. And yeah, so, all right, Lee, one more. Yes.
And we would be amiss if we did not highlight this as an unsung episode. Evolution, topical choice here on Easter Sunday, because it's the first time that we see the collars on the uniform, so we have automatically become peak Next Generation. So we've gone from the lowly bowels of season one and two. Now they've got the pips on their necks. This is officially the best Star Trek series ever. Maybe. So yeah, and there's the return of Dr. Crusher. Pulaski's never ever heard from again. You know, she just vanished. She must not have enjoyed Shades of Grey that much. So yeah, Crusher's back. It's the start of season three. And yeah, it's a good enough episode, but those collars, you know, that's the big turning point of the franchise. Yeah, it's not the writers and the budgets and all that. It is the introduction of the collars.
Well, season three, Next Generation, isn't the only topic we've been talking about here on the network. Here's a quick look at what you might have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Best of Both Worlds. It's a good episode. I enjoyed it. I remember when it first took off. Family was 100 times better to me. I'd watch Family 10 times to 1 over watching Best of Both Worlds or Inner Light. Those are the types of things that interest me. And I do enjoy the action-adventure pieces of it. I truly do. But I love seeing the characters. And that's why Wrath of Khan works.
Warp 5.
It was just mesmerizing to me. And I remember when my dad, a long time ago, had an airplane. He would take us up flying, but never, you know, would hold the wheel and say, hey, we're flying an airplane. But I never really was bitten by the flying bug. But it happened right there on a runway in Hawaii, on Oahu.
The 602 Club.
And we saw it in the first Alien as well. I mean, like, the company sent them to the planet to bring that alien back, right? And I didn't remember the part where, in this film, where Burke sent the colonists to go and find the ship on his own without authority from the company. I had forgotten that part. So that was kind of an interesting revelation, seeing this movie for the first time and 12 or 13 years, however long it's been since I've seen this.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
You can listen to every show on the network at Trek.fm with links for iTunes streaming services and a direct download link. This episode of Earl Grey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPod, iPad, Kindle, Android, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/TrekFM. Thank you, Audible, for supporting Earl Grey and Trek FM. If you are a weekly listener and would like to directly help Earl Grey, please consider becoming a patron of Trek FM. At patreon.com/TrekFM, you can choose a pledge level and receive rewards. For example, $5 a month gets you into our patron zone. You get exclusive content and access to our early release of all of the shows. At the $15 a month, you get to participate in our monthly roundtable discussions. They are so much fun, and that's how I got started on the network. At $25 a month, you get associate producer credits for any podcast you choose. At this time, we would like to thank our current Patreon associate producers, Michael Huter and Justin Ozer. Thank you for supporting Earl Grey. Another way to help out the network and get cool stuff is to visit Redbubble. At redbubble.com/shop/TrekFM, you can find amazing designs for t-shirts, pillows, phone cases, and more. And with each purchase, a portion of the sales goes to Trek FM. Connect with other Trek FM listeners on our Facebook discussion group called The Babel Conference. You can search that on Facebook, B-A-B-E-L, or you can like the facebook.com/TrekFM page for show updates and other announcements. The network is also on Twitter at Trek FM. If you would like to contact Lee, Richard, or me, Amy, visit trek.fm/contact to send us a subspace message or find us on social media. So, Richard, where can people find you on the internet?
Well, they could find me exclusively only on Facebook. because that is the only social media platform I am on now. So, yeah, they can find me in the Babel Conference, pop in here and there for a little trouble here and there, as you heard about the Klingons. But otherwise, yeah, that's it. So, yeah.
And Lee?
Yeah, you can find me on the internet at Lee_Nostromo. Flying the flag for Alien as always there. It's Alien Day soon, so that's exciting. And I get to see Alien Covenant weeks before all of you Americans. So, yeah, I'm feeling pretty good about myself. And, yeah, you can find me on the Filibuster podcast talking about nerd and geek culture. You can find me behind the scenes somewhat on the Glasgow's Green podcast. And you can find me kicking around being a geek in Edinburgh. So, yeah, there you go.
And thanks for asking. You can find me on Twitter at Miss Amy Nelson. I got a Twitter account just for Star Trek, so you can follow me there. But my favorite place really is the Babel Conference on Facebook. So join us next time for another cup of Earl Grey.
Eaten any good books lately?
Today is a good day to die.
Great joy and gratitude.